We're back in order.
So there's a representative from Department of Public Safety, I believe, Lieutenant Story, available to answer questions.
Yes.
Shelley Owens from the Department of Health. So before I wrap up my testimony and answering questions that the committee may have, I just want to add just one little thing that I've been doing in the committee. It's because these people fight for our lives every day, like I said before. And this legislation is just an opportunity for the legislature to fight for theirs. So thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much.
I notice the first word of the amendment says fighter.
Oh.
It's the fighter amendment.
Yeah, it's the fighter amendment.
Do you want to have that offered?
Yeah, we'll mark it up in just a sec. We'll do this quickly. Okay, thank you very much. Lieutenant Story. You there?
I'm on mute now. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I'm sorry, anybody hear me?
We can hear you now.
Okay, fine. Yeah, I just wanted to take a couple of minutes and testify in support of this bill. It's a bill that is truly needed out there. I've known for many years how dangerous it is. I've had two patrol vehicles myself destroyed while I was on the shoulder of the road working accidents, and one of them caused me to end up in the hospital the following day. I had a patrol sergeant, my first patrol sergeant when I joined the department, was nearly killed when he was rear-ended by a vehicle slamming into his patrol car as he was assisting a motorist, and his patrol car actually burst into flames, and it was just a miracle he escaped from it. And up to it as recent as just a couple of months ago, we nearly had two troopers struck by a vehicle up in the Palmer region as a motorist came flying to their scene at an accident. But it's long overdue. It's something that, of course, needs some education to the public, and I think that our public information office will certainly be able to get the word out through public service announcements and other efforts to let the public know that it is required, if this bill becomes law, to slow down and to provide a cushion of safety to the people that are out there trying to help others in need, not just the troopers and police officers, but of course the volunteer firemen and the professional firemen and other people out there trying to take care of business on the shoulder of the road. There's many near misses. I saw one just this morning, an officer doing a traffic stop on the shore of the road. He was in plain clothes, and his coattail was whipping in the wind a little bit, and the car passing by him actually struck his coattail. So it's an ongoing problem, has been for many years, and we certainly hope that this bill becomes a reality. So I'd gladly answer any questions if there are any.
Okay, thank you, Lieutenant Story. Any questions? Okay, hearing none, we'll go to Shelley Owens.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Shelley Owens. I'm a health program manager with the Section of Community Health and Emergency Medical Services Division of Public Health, State Department of Health and Social Services. The department supports this bill in the hopes it will reduce the incidence of secondary collisions resulting from inattentive and distracted drivers. A few more statistics for you. It is estimated that there are 12,000 emergency medical vehicle collisions each year, and the U.S. Fire Administration reports that emergency vehicle crashes are the second leading cause of death for firefighters. The International Association of Chiefs of Police reported that in 1997, nearly 40% of law enforcement officers who died in the line of duty died in traffic. In Washington, a study found that in a seven-year period, over 3,000 shoulder collisions where a vehicle was parked on the side of the road, resulted in 40 deaths and 1,700 injuries. In Florida, during a five-year period, 1996 to 2000, motorists crashed into working law enforcement officers or law enforcement vehicles that were stopped along Florida roadways 1,800 times, resulting in 5 deaths and over 400 injuries. In Alaska, in the four-year period from 1998 to 2001, 386 emergency response vehicles were involved in accidents. Of the 386 crashes, 46 incidents involved a parked emergency response vehicle. There's also a statistic from California that once there's been an initial accident, the fact that this vehicle is on the side of the road creates a 600% increase of likelihood of a secondary collision. Motor vehicle operators are exposed to multiple sources of distraction, including mobile phones, radios, children, failure to see or hear sirens and lights, and driver inattention. The department supports the efforts to reduce the number and severity of injuries to fire, EMS, and law enforcement personnel at emergency scenes.
Thank you very much. Questions?
I have a question.
Representative Gruenberg.
There is, and maybe it's, we don't have anybody from the criminal division. I see Ms. Vertul used to be public defender.
Oh,
there's
no.
There's a statute.
That happens when you come.
There's a statute that says if a mental state is not stated, it is
knowing.
Yeah. Well, is that the general requirements of culpability? The minimal requirement for criminal liability is a performance by a person of conduct that includes a voluntary act or perform an act that a person is capable of performing. Where is that statute that I'm looking for? We cite from time to time.
I don't know.
Might be case law.
No, it says if the statute is silent as to the mental intent, this is what the mental intent is.
What's the relevance, Representative Gruenberg? We'll find that, but is it relevant right now?
Well, yeah.
Okay.
It is, because the sub A in here just requires you to move over. Sub B makes it a Class A misdemeanor if it results in injury, but it doesn't say what the it just says who violates this section, and it would almost make it a crime of strict liability. And I was thinking we should at least say negligently or something, since you're putting people in jail for a year. And I don't remember where that it may not be the statute I want, but I was just wondering where it was. You see what I'm talking about?
No, Chair.
Representative Garrett.
While knowing is really important in a lot of the criminal bills, I can't imagine you possibly using the defense that you sped by a car, a car with flashing lights, but it wasn't knowing. I mean, and that would be worse, right? You didn't notice that the car.
Right.
Then your defense would be, I didn't even notice. I wasn't looking.
I was sleeping.
That would be like a felony, I think. It would actually be worse if it wasn't knowing, I think.
Yeah, okay. Thank you, Ms. Gertula. The statute I'm looking for is AS 11.81.610, except as provided in sub 600B. The provision of law defining an offense doesn't prescribe a culpable mental state. The culpable mental state that must be proved with respect to conduct is knowingly, and a circumstance or a result is recklessly. I think that probably would apply, but I'm not sure, and I'm not sure what we want. I'm simply drawing it to the attention of the committee here. And I'm satisfied with leaving it the way it is, because I think that 1181.610 would be what would be read into the statute if we leave it alone.
Okay, thank you, Representative Gruenberg. Okay, any further testimony in the audience that I overlooked? Anyone online I overlooked? Okay, Representative Holm, Amendment Number 1.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We close testimony then?
Yes.
I offer Amendment Number 1.
Is there any objection to the movement of Amendment Number 1? Hearing none, Amendment Number 1 carries. Any further amendments to House Bill 438?
A couple questions, Madam Chair.
Representative Garrett?
Yeah, Amendment Number 1 was a good one. That clarified a lot for me. I'm wondering, though, I mean, certainly I understand the circumstance where, you know, cars, a trooper is there or an ambulance is there and they're dealing with an accident or an injured person but what if you're driving along the highway and in the right lane and there's a trooper who's pulled somebody over for speeding in the breakdown lane? Can you still drive by at 55 miles an hour? I guess that would be a safe or prudent speed under the circumstances, or would that now be a crime?
Representative Fulham?
It's my understanding, thank you, Madam Chair. It's my understanding through the chair to Representative Guerra that the reason we offered the amendment was so that it would be reasonable and prudent speed. And that means it would have to be something defensible at some point in time if there was a problem. And it would assume if someone was going 55 miles an hour past a problem on the side of the road, he would miss the other person. If he didn't, I suppose it would be no different than any other case where you are negligent or reckless in your driving.
It does say to Representative Guerra, if you have two or more lanes traveling in the same direction, you shall safely vacate to the lane closest to the emergency fire. Is that right?
But I think in reality, I think a lot of people do stay in the left, in the right lane when they see a trooper pulling somebody over for speeding. But I think that would be okay under Representative Holmes' amendment, because his amendment says, or if you are driving safely under the circumstances.
Yeah. That's reasonable and prudent. Okay. Any further questions, Representative Guerra?
Nope.
Okay. Further amendments or committee discussion? Did you think about, Representative Holm, did you think about adding in, I saw Terrio had that thing in the paper today. Is there already a House version of that, the emergency signal override?
Yeah, let's get that in there, too.
Do you want to do that? I thought about that earlier today, but I don't know if you want to. The emergency signal.
I hadn't thought about it, but.
Override.
Madam Chair, I've talked to people about the Terrio bill, because the same firefighters who were interested in our carbon monoxide bill and the arson bill had the third priority, with those two were priorities, and so was the president's bill. And we talked about that at some length, and they felt that there were, you know, we talked about putting it in on the House side, and as I recall, and they felt there was no need, that that bill was moving, and I've watched it, and it seems to be moving.
Fair enough. Just an idea. Okay.
Yeah, good idea.
Is there a motion?
Madam Chair, I move CS for House Bill 438, State Affairs, Version D, with individual recommendations and attached testimony.
As amended.
As amended.
Any objection? Hearing none. 438 is moved. Representative Krutula.
Madam Chair.
By the way, Les and I have been trying to figure out with the title of underage what we could do to get our stripper bill in every bill that
naked underage people in this bill.
Oh, you know that amendment's coming on the floor.
You probably have to strip the bill.
If your bill gets to the floor before ours does, Representative Krutula, you could just expect a friendly amendment.
We should have a small amendment to this.
We haven't seen the last of that amendment.
The
title is going to get tightened up.
We've been putting it in a veterinarian's bill.
For the record, my name's Beth Krutula, a representative from Juneau, and my aide Aurora Hawk, who's done the majority of work on this legislation, is with me. House Bill 430 solves a very small problem for 18-year-olds who would like to work in establishments where alcohol is served, but they, of course, do not serve it, don't touch it, can't even sell it. We had a constituent come to us with an issue because he wanted to hire an 18-year-old who was a foster child, was technically out of foster care because he's already considered an adult under that system. And under the current law, you have to have the signature of a parent. So he had no parents, he couldn't get the foster parents under the state system, and he was just out of luck. The same situation occurs with 18-year-olds who travel to Alaska. Ms. Hawk's done a pretty remarkable job of working with the constituent, the ABC board, who supports the legislation. Mothers Against Drunk Driving has no opposition. And with that, that's how brief it is. And it just solves a problem 18-year-olds have fallen into. And Ms. Hawk and I can try to answer any questions. This does deal just with hotels and restaurants, so I don't think hopefully your idea doesn't really fit in here.
We're eating places.
Eating places.
Well, maybe you can stretch it, but.
You know, this is the first time I've heard the chair of a committee wanting to tack a major bill onto a minority.
That's how bad it's gotten. That's just how bad it's
that's
gotten.
That's a tribute to you, that you'd be able to pull your engine, that big train.
Yes.
Doot, doot.
Representative Guerra.
So the bill applies to a hotel, restaurant, or eating place. I think the bill is fine, but it does raise the question of whether we would now be allowing 16 or 17-year-olds, if our bill doesn't pass, Madam Chair,
yep,
to work in the Bush Company if they serve fries. And I guess that's that's just incumbent upon us to deal with it in the other bill. But
maybe Ms. Hawk can answer this.
I do believe that this would only apply to places that have a certain type of it's a licensed premise. It's a certain type of license to sell alcohol, which involves that most of the business does not come from the alcohol. I can't remember the exact name of the license, but it's a different category.
Restaurant. Yeah, I believe that's right. Also, the 16 and 17-year-olds still have to get permission. They aren't on their own. It just covers the 18-year-olds. The 19-year-olds already can do it on their own volition. So it was the 18-year-olds who have reached age of majority and are alone, but still need the signature, which in many cases, if they're out of state, it's impossible. If they're the foster child, it's impossible.
Representative Cotula, did you consider, rather than moving the age limit down, looking at a bypass or something? Some method of going to the Department of Labor and making your argument that you're a foster child and made your best attempt?
Thank you. Through the chair, we've actually worked on this for a couple of years with Department of Labor and the ABC board, and it's a kind of a morass of statutes that are quite circular, and we all decided that it actually did need statutory change. We couldn't, and they wanted to do it. If they could have, they would have.
Representative Samuel?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just making sure that I'm clear, all you're doing is moving 18-year-olds from one category to the other category.
That's exactly correct.
And 16 and 17-year-olds where they are, and moving 18-year-olds. I had one question, and it pertains to they passed a smoking ordinance in Anchorage, and the way that they drew the line was they distinguished a licensing mechanism somehow. Mm-hmm. Bars that sell food, Humpies downtown, and restaurants that serve alcohol, i.e. Harry's in Midtown, which are very similar establishments, and they based a lot of it on the age of the people they could serve as busing people. A lot of contention between the owners of very, very similar restaurants on what they call them. And I don't think this will impact it at all, but I...
Through the chair, it
comes to mind.
Probably wouldn't, because there would be 18-year-olds working in those both sets of establishments now if they had permission from their parents. So all this does is take that one requirement off. So I doubt it. I would doubt that was the distinguishing factor, but I admit I don't know.
I doubt it, too, and I certainly wouldn't want to hold the bill up on that one question. But
we can certainly go ask.
Between various, very similar restaurants, the line got drawn between them, and a lot of it dealt with how old are the busing people allowed in the restaurant.
We can certainly check that out for you and bring it back if that's your wish, or we can check it out and
let
you know.
Just let me know later.
Representative?
So are you saying, I think I recall that dividing line too. That's the dividing line that says that essentially if it's primarily a restaurant, one thing, but if it's primarily a bar, then the other thing? Is that something like that?
Sure, that's the way the line got drawn, and the deal that got made on the assembly at the time, I wish Representative Meyer were here. choice, and I don't know enough about why something is licensed and how old you have to be with a certain type of license, and I don't know enough about it, but I remember it was an issue, and I just don't think this is going to affect it one way or other. I seem to remember the line being 21 only and underage.
Through the chair, to be able to serve alcohol, you have to be 21, to be able to sell it even, and that might have been what the distinguishing factor was, it's under 21.
I think that was the line, so I don't think this will affect it at all.
Anything further? Any further testimony online or here in the audience?
We would have had the ABC board, Ms. Chair, but unfortunately he was unavailable, so
no
they
problem.
Do support the legislation.
Ducking this controversial bill.
Yeah. Okay. Is there a motion? Okay. So moved. No amendments. Zero fiscal note. Possible amendments forthcoming.
Lots of amendments on the floor.
I call it the Jack bill.
Possible amendments forthcoming.
On the floor.
No title amendments.
Okay. No objection?
Thank
all right,
you.
4:30 is moved. Is Chenault staff here? There's still people online, so I'll get start taking their testimony real quick, and then let's end. Yes.
How long are we going to go?
Animal?
Just till 5. Is that okay?
Do you mind if we lie? 5:15.
Okay. No problem. Let's go right now. Yeah, let's take about 5. Yep, let's have an Addies. So instead, we are going to take up 244 at the top of the plate tomorrow. So it'll be first up tomorrow. Okay? Yes, back off the record. Thank you.
Hello?
Yes, and we're on House Bill 275, and I'm going to take public testimony. And Sue Wright just said thank you for sticking with her. You missed that, or you might have heard. And we appreciate your patience. We've just had a lot of bills up today, a lot of important stuff. We've actually had to hold a couple over tomorrow, but we wanted to get to testimony on this important bill. So I'm going to start with, I'm just going to go in the order of how they read. Elise Hasea, Tim Kolbath, Al Story, Chris Heintz, and Barbara Brink. So let's start with Elise.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Elise Tia, and I'm Assistant Attorney General of the Department of Law. I typically represent the Department of Environmental Conservation. Assistant Attorney General Ann Carpinetti, who represents Department of Public Safety, is the lead Assistant Attorney General on this bill. But she's out of town today, and the department asked that I attend in her place. That is the Department of Law.
Okay.
Excuse me?
Okay.
I only recently received this committee substitute that I'm working with, version U. Each of the committee members should have a copy of an email, which I sent this morning to Vanessa Tondini, detailing my comments regarding this bill. These are friendly, suggested amendments, so I hope will improve the clarity of the bill and assist with its future enforcement. I'll just go in the order of my email. Page 1, AS0355-100A, the word include, you can add an S at the end, so it's includes. Page 1, 0355-100A1, it mentions water must be provided daily. If it's not provided to an animal at all times, daily suggests once a day, which I think you'll find is probably not sufficient. For example, if it were a hot summer, someone walking out and offering a dog a bucket of water once a day is not going to be enough. I suggest you delete the word daily. Page 1, AS0355-100A2. This phrase is very awkward. In my email, I suggest to clean it up. You should revise it to read shelter, semicolon. Indoor shelter must be maintained at a temperature compatible with the good health of the animal, semicolon. Outdoor shelter must, and then the bill continues on. It's really just cleaning up the introductory phraseology.
Okay.
Page 20355-100A5. In order to clarify the standards expected from the state vet, add, quote, for the health and safety of animals, unquote, after the word standards on line 9. Page 2, AS0355-100B. The state vet should be the final arbiter of any disagreement under this paragraph. Vets may disagree about the treatment of animals or have a biased interest in a particular animal. The state vet serves the public and animal good and thus should be able to provide a final professional opinion if needed. To effectuate this, add to the end of paragraph B at line 14, open quote, in the event of a disagreement under this paragraph, comma, the state veterinarian will provide the professional opinion needed under this paragraph, close quote. Page 2, AS0355-100A3. DEC does not currently have authority under this, the existing wording of this bill to adopt regulations regarding sufficiency of care under ASO 355-100D in order to allow DEC and the state vet to promulgate such regulations, add a new subsection to ASO 3.55-100. That would be in paragraph C, stating the Department of Environmental Conservation may adopt regulations to implement this section. It looks like the bill was intended to allow DEC, i.e. the state vet, to adopt regulations, but I checked with Deborah Baer, Department of Law, head of regulations, and read her the current language, and she said it was actually not enough and made the suggested change, which I'm suggesting to you. Page 2, AS 03-55-110A, the discretion to enforce against animal abusers should be with the Department of Public Safety and not an unnamed, possibly private organization that may or may not, quote, wish, unquote, to act. Effectuate this, remove, quote unquote, on which it wishes to take action, unquote, in line 19. Page 3, AS 03-55-110B, custodians of the abused animals may be unwilling to have their location known. Private home shelters and vet offices probably don't want the former animal owner or possessor showing up at their home or office demanding their animal back. The animal owner or former possessor doesn't need to know where the animal is. More helpful would be a reference to the statutes and regs they could look to for how to petition the court to get their animal back. Thus, remove, open quote, and under whose custody the animal is to be sheltered and cared for, close quote, from lines 3 to 4, and if desired, add, open quote, and a reference to their right to petition the court under AS 03-55-130, close quote, to line 3. Page 3, AS 03-55.120D, line 10, delete the word every and replace with A. Every reasonable effort connotes something which may be sort of unending. I think a reasonable effort may be what the drafters intended. Page 3, AS 03-55-130C, line 24. To make the language clear, replace warranted by with reasonable under. I think the word warranted could, in some circumstances, be a little more ambiguous than the more familiar reasonable standard. I'm almost done. I'm sorry this is so tedious. Page 4, AS 1161-138A6, delete a herd, collection, or kennel from line 30. It's an unnecessary phrase. It complicates enforcement. This is talking about a violation against 10 animals. If you leave a herd, collection, or kennel in there as well, someone could argue, yeah, I may have 10 terrorists or whatever, but that's not a herd, collection, or kennel. It has some other phraseology name. It's really unnecessary and could get in the way later of enforcing the bill. Page 5, AS 1161-138A7, regarding line 2, which talks about elements similar to a crime under this section. I'm wondering if the drafters could be more specific, perhaps a reference to child abuse statutes, if that's what they're referring to, or whatever other statutes they might have intended. Page 5, AS 11.61.138B. This paragraph is very awkward. If you look at the reading of it, I would suggest that it would be revised to read each animal that is subject to cruelty to animals under A1 through 5 and 7 of this section shall constitute a separate offense. And that's it for my comments. I'm sorry it's a bit tedious, there's a lot of drafting cleanups, but I think that these suggested friendly amendments will make the bill a stronger, better bill that will be easier to enforce and clearer as well. I'm available for questions.
Okay, thank you very much, Elise. And the committee's in possession of those suggestions, and I think what we'll do tomorrow when we mark the bill up is we'll go through and I'll offer as conceptual the technical ones, and then the ones where there's potential substantive debate, we'll talk about that tomorrow. But thanks for picking up on a lot of the things that are in there. It's good. Okay, next I'm going to go to Tim Colbath.
Yeah, good afternoon. My name is Tim Colbath. I'm the founder of Alaska's Extended Life Animal Sanctuary here on the Kenai Peninsula. I was very concerned that this bill was going to be basically gutted, but it doesn't sound like it has been. It sounds like it has just reinforced what already was a major step in the right direction. I'd like to vote our support for the bill, and I know everybody's been waiting for a long time. That's about all I have to say. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your patience. Okay, next, Lieutenant Story. Did you want to add anything?
Well, I simply wanted to say, ditto.
I think Elise did an excellent job of dissecting it and coming up with some good points there. The one that really certainly applies to DPS to the greatest extent is the advisement of the owners of where the animals may be located at. She points out that that's probably not a good idea, and I certainly agree with that. Mm-hmm. I don't think it'll be a burden for an enforcement officer simply to refer people to the statute or the court so that they can petition for return of their animals. Other than that, I think she brings up some excellent points, and we're certainly in support of it and encourage the protection of the animals.
Yeah. You probably see a lot out there.
We do. We've seen some ugly things.
Yeah. One of the things I remember when this bill was moving through the first year, what's so important too is, and I see we've had a handout on stop abuse and it talks about it, but the connection, the link between cruelty to animals and other crimes is so significant, and I'm sure you've seen that as well. But if you can get to somebody early on before the violence escalates.
But, and I agree completely, and I think it's referenced in the handout material, the Jeffrey Dahmer syndrome, if you want to call it that. But it's one of the things they certainly teach police officers as well as teachers, is things to watch for and juvenile behavior. If there is a cruelty to animal issues, may certainly indicate abnormal personality traits.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Lieutenant Story. You're with us almost every day in judiciary. We appreciate it. Okay, Chris Heintz with the Alaska Equine Rescue.
Hi, my name is Chris Heintz. I live on a canine peninsula, and I'm a volunteer for Alaska Equine Rescue. I have also taken in unwanted and abused animals on a personal level, mainly horses, for over 20 years in Alaska.
Mm.
And I wanted to say that I then told the board of Bill 275 it's time that we stop the abuse. And I'm so pleased to listen all afternoon and find out that the bill wasn't watered down or stopped or anything by now. And I'm supporting you all the way. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chris. Okay, we have three more people online. Barbara Brink, Ethel Christensen, and Sally Clampett. So Barbara Brink.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you hear me?
Yes.
This is Barb Brink. I'm the director of the Alaska Public Defender Agency, and I just wanted to confine my remarks to noting that this is a huge change in the current status of the law, as everyone has said, and I just want to make sure we're all well aware of the requirements here, because you're going to start prosecuting more people. There are going to be costs involved that involve the public defender, the prosecutor's office, court system, and corrections. My first question has to do with the amendment suggested by the Attorney General on page 2, section B, line 10. Somehow this kind of, I think, muddies the water as to who makes these determinations of sufficiency of food, water, shelter, space, etc. Because frankly, in making this a Class A misdemeanor offense, those determinations are going to have to be made by a jury. So perhaps we should put some limiting language in that section that limits the state veterinarian and the veterinarian to providing opinions with regarding to the sufficiency of evidence to just simply engage in the prosecution. My next concern is I just want to emphasize, currently the law requires that a person knowingly inflict severe physical pain or prolonged suffering on an animal, or with criminal negligence they fear to care for an animal and cause death, serious physical pain, or prolonged suffering, or that they kill someone, an animal, by using a decompression chamber. So everything in addition to that, paragraph 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 on page 4, and all the sections under the Class B misdemeanor section beginning at page 5, paragraph 1 and 2 at lines 26 and 29, through section 4, operating a pickup truck and failing to secure the animal. These are all things that are not currently crimes and will be crimes under this new bill. And frankly, when we prosecute crimes requiring, when we prosecute an assault against a person, we require that that person either be placed in serious physical injury or that they actually suffered a physical injury, which is any pain or impairment. And here, we're providing that if you recklessly fail to observe minimum standards of care for your pets, even if there is no injury whatsoever, you can be prosecuted and convicted under this section. So I just, the broadness of this bill is rather enormous. And while I can't predict with accuracy exactly how many dollars that's going to cost the state and in particular my agency, I can promise you that this will be costly. Thank you.
Barbara, which particular place are you talking about the crime not involving any injury? I'm just looking down the list here.
On page four, section two, subparagraph five. It says,
yeah, okay.
The person owns or is responsible for the care of an animal and recklessly fails to provide the minimum standards of care. Currently in 11-61-140, paragraph two, if you fail to care for an animal and as a result cause death, severe physical pain, or prolonged suffering, that's a crime. But there's no like damage element in subparagraph five here. It could have had no deleterious effect on an animal, and yet you could still be prosecuted and convicted.
Okay. Is that the only section where you're saying the injury is devoid?
Yeah, there's no requirement of injury in that section. And in paragraph one, that reflects the statute as it exists now.
Yeah, no, I know that.
Only inflicting that kind of pain or injury or suffering is already a crime.
Yeah, that I understood.
Madam Chairman?
Yes.
Yes. This is Sherilyn Wright, Ms. Brink. Perhaps it would be proper if you were to call Representative Chenault's office in the morning. I think he did try to talk to you or tried to leave a message for you today, and some of these issues can be worked out in the morning.
Through the chair, I'd be happy to do that. I'm sorry I didn't receive any messages today, but I will call first thing in the morning.
Okay. Any more questions for Ms. Brink? Okay, hearing none. Ethel Christensen. Ethel, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
I think I sent you a hard copy of my input, but I want to emphasize that I think there should be something for heinous crimes and jail sentence for heinous crimes, and also there should be drug and mental counseling for other cases. We've had experience with all of them. So I would like to see something in there for a mandatory jail sentence for heinous crimes, particularly such as the German Shepherd that was stabbed to death here locally, and then the killing dismemberment of dogs, car dogs at Brewster's department store a few years ago, and another incident where their couple had to wash their small dogs being, they were bound, had to wash their small dogs being stabbed to death, and I could go on and on. And then, of course, we're still dealing with the mental and drug cases here. They're still in the court, in the law. I mean, the courts, there's still settlements going on. So I think there should be mandatory drug and psychological counseling.
Yeah.
Because, and also, you stated before, well put, that when they're cruel to animals, they're also cruel to people. And I attended a conference there years ago in Seattle where retired judge, William Long wrote a book called Asses versus Jackasses. And he was a juvenile court judge, and he said there was a 10-year-old boy specifically that set fire to the neighbor's cat. And by the age of 20 or 19, I guess it was, he was in Walla Walla prison for murder. So, you know, it's very, very related.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably all I have to say, except I've had years of this, and this is long overdue.
Thank you, Ethel. Thanks for all the hard work you've done in the community. You're well known as one of the first people to look out for animals in our community, and I, for one, really appreciate the work that you've done on behalf of the community and with SPCA.
Thank you.
Thank you. And your notes, your hard copy is a part of the record.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, and then finally I have Sally Clampett.
Yes, thank you. I'm Sally Clampett. I am president of Alaska Equine Rescue, and I do support this bill. I would like you to know that Alaska Equine Rescue currently has in custody in foster care three horses, which were taken into protective custody by the state. We have had those three animals since, well, two of them since September of 2002, and one of them since December of 2002. And this case has not gone yet to court. Currently is marked up for trial the second half of June. So at our expense, and we're glad to do it, but I hope the state recognizes that groups like ours are very willing to take on the expense and the burden of providing you with whatever support you need. I see this piece of legislation before you with many provisions that may make the procedure a whole lot easier, a whole lot more efficient, and faster. My comment with regards to Ms. Brink and her concerns about additional work for the Public Defender's Agency is simply that I hope she's quite right. I hope that there are increased prosecutions, and I hope that her agency will embrace them and take them in because they are badly, badly needed. The state law, as it is currently written and as it is currently enforced, is a green light for cruelty and abuse. Cruelty to animals is the unwanted child of the judicial system, and it takes the back seat to many other things. I don't believe that our organization or any other animal welfare group subscribes to putting animals before people. Nevertheless, to ignore the really ugly, ugly situations that go on out there would be very remiss as a moral responsibility. I am happy to share with anybody on this committee or any other committee kind of details and information that might give you a more realistic picture of what's going on out there. And if there's anything that we can do to help, we'd be glad to do that. So I support this bill. I urge you to make it as tough as possible. I absolutely think you should leave in the bill the details of a minimum standard of animal care. I think you should absolutely leave in the bill the new areas that would become criminal, because they are criminal now already. It's just that it is harder to prosecute them because the current language is so vague. It's just very, very difficult to enforce. I have spoken with district attorney's offices, veterinarians, animal control people, all over the place, and they all agree that the law as it is currently written is just extremely difficult to enforce. This piece of legislation has a lot more to recommend it without being sort of silly and fanatical. I think it would get the job done.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Is there anyone else online that I overlooked? Anyone here in the audience? Kristen? Okay. So with that, we'll close public testimony, and we'll bring the bill back tomorrow and work through the amendments that we have. Thank you. And with that, judiciary is adjourned.